One woman put it this way. She said, "I was determined to treat my children the same way, but now that I've had both sons and daughters, there's no question in my mind, that's how they came out of the box." Now, of course, those who favor the cultural influence approach will tell you that even though parents think they're treating their children the same way, they may not be, and clearly that's true. But let me give another kind of evidence to support an argument that there may be some biological basis to some of these patterns, and that is evidence that the patterns go very far back. For example, in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, written in 1599, Brutus's wife, Portia, wants to be his best friend, and her idea of what this means is very similar to ours. There's one scene in which Portia wakes up and she realizes that Brutus, her husband, has left their bed, so she goes looking for him, and she finds him pacing the halls, clearly worried about something. She begs him to tell her what's worrying him. The speech in which she does this sounds very much like the kinds of conversations that best friends have in our culture. This is what Portia says. "Within the bond of marriage, tell me, Brutus, is it accepted I should know no secrets that appertain to you? Am I yourself, but as it were, in sort or limitation, to keep with you at meals, comfort your bed, and talk to you sometimes? Dwell I but in the suburbs of your good pleasure? If it be no more, Portia is Brutus' harlot, not his wife." When Brutus assures her, "You are my true and honorable wife," she protests, "If this were true, then should I know this secret." So here we have a play written in 1599 by a man, as it happens, capturing the assumption of a wife way back then, and what he was actually representing was an even earlier time, Julius Caesar, the play Julius Caesar taking place in ancient times, that the wife feels that to be a true partner to her husband, she should know his secrets. A similar sentiment emerges in an even more distant conversation. This is the Arabian romance of the Bedouin hero Antar. This is believed to have been written somewhere between the year 1080 and the year 1400. It's based, in fact, on pre-Islamic oral folklore. In one episode, there's a character whose name is Al-Minhal, who is escaping a king that he has wronged, and he comes upon a ruined castle inhabited by a female demon, whose name is Dahia. She gives him shelter, she feeds him, she falls in love with him. And she wins his love by her attentions, which include her conversations. And this is a quote from that Arabian romance, Antar. "Dahia began to converse with him and show him affection in her words until he had eaten all he needed. And now she sounds rather like Portia, or like one of us," she says. "I want you to be my companion and to be my lord, and I will be your wife. Disclose to me what is in your heart. Do not believe that I will ever let you go. Open your mind to me, for I have need to know your thoughts." So here we are again, way back in the perhaps 11th century, where a woman's sense of being close is to know your inner thoughts. Al-Minhal and Dahia are instantly married, and we're told long was their companionship and they loved each other dearly. I'm not suggesting that relationships between women and men were the same then as they are today. Needless to say, I'm sure there were many differences. But it's intriguing to think that what women regarded as intimacy, talking about what's on your mind, telling your feelings, telling your secrets, has had something in common right through the millennia. Here's another related pattern that seems to have endured through the millennia. Remember the situation, and I've referred to this situation numerous times in these lectures, where the husband can't think of anything to tell his wife when she asks how his day was, and then later comes up with an amusing story to entertain a gathering, what I have been talking about as report talk and as public speaking. To the wife, it's a failure of intimacy. If we're truly close, I should hear everything first. But to him, the public situation of addressing a gathering is the one where he feels really called upon to talk. These two phenomena relate to each other. That is, the feeling of women that a person opening their hearts and telling you what's on their minds is a sign of intimacy, and on the other hand, that men are more likely to do that when they're talking to an audience of strangers or trying to win people over, brings us to the paradox that many women were, in fact, drawn to the men that they fell in love with because the men did talk at length. And perhaps in that context, the men felt they needed to because they were trying to win her over. One woman actually told me about falling in love with her husband when they had one of their early dates, and he was going on and on and on, and she was starting to think, how come he's talking so much? He's not interested in me, when he suddenly said, could you help me out here? Making it clear that he was doing all the talking, not because he only wanted to talk about himself, but because he felt that was incumbent upon him, required of him in that situation. Well, this scenario of a man winning a woman over by verbal performance, we find throughout literature, going way back. Let's go back to Beowulf, that saga of the Anglo-Saxon period. It's usually dated to the 8th century.